This is Sign Language with Bruce Williams and Doc Goldstein.
Hi, and welcome to episode 174 of Sign Language. It's been a long time between drinks. Apologies for that. This is Bruce Williams from signlanguagepodcast.com.
And this is Doc Goldstein from California.
How you going, Doc?
I'm doing pretty well. I'm busy. Really busy.
Well, that's good to hear. What are you busy at?
Well, I'm teaching at two schools, but I'm also mixing a project for a couple of projects, actually, for two really good artists.
Oh, nice.
You know, I don't know that I can say who they are, but it's just really great music in both cases and great people. And I'm just really happy to be doing it. So, but yeah, it's a good thing I don't sleep much, though, because, you know.
So were you involved in the tracking of those or just the mixing?
Well, with one of them, it's just mixing. And with the other one, I was involved in some tracking in the past, which is how I got to know them. And I'm going to be recording with them soon. And then I'll do a mix. And so on this other client, I'm just mixing. But I mixed some stuff for him a year ago. And then he came back to me and wants me to mix a bunch of stuff. So I'm doing that.
Excellent. Well, that sounds like fun.
Yeah, it's a lot of work, you know. But the way I mix, I have to take a lot of breaks so my ears don't fold.
Sure.
And I actually think more people do that than admit it, and the people who don't should.
Yeah. Just out of curiosity and no judgments, how long does it take you to mix a song?
Depends on the song, but it might take all day, or it might take a half a day.
Yep.
But if it's going to take a half a day, that presupposes that I've done all the work on it in advance, like fixing all the screw-ups, getting rid of noises, editing, maybe moving the drums around if he's comes in late after a fill, you know, or stuff like that. I mean, once all the stuff has been repaired, then I can do it in about 4 hours, unless it's 3 a.m, in which case it takes me a little longer.
Sounds like you and I are on the same page in that sense, because I do spend a lot of time cleaning up tracks before I start the mix, just making sure everything is tight and in the pocket. And yeah, and like you, probably 3 to 4 hours to mix a track, depending on how complex the track is, of course.
Yeah, I got a track last week from one of my clients who, it was really complicated. He had everything broke up into pieces. And so one of the things to make sure I wanted to do was make sure that it transitioned from one piece to the other, that the levels were correct and the tones matched and all that happy stuff, you know, so...
Do you mean the song went through different arrangements and he'd recorded them as separate parts?
Yes, that's exactly what I mean.
Right, okay. Wow. So you had to stitch it together into a complete arrangement and then mix the whole song, or did you mix the various parts of the song individually and then stitch the two track together at the end?
No, I kind of did it as I went. You know, I'd play through one part, and then when the next part came, I just let it come crashing in, and then I'd adjust it until it fit.
Yeah, right.
And then once I got the whole thing, I'd go to the next piece. So I didn't mix it in sections. Some people do that. I don't do that. Because to me, one thing I don't think we've talked about is this whole bit about the bouncing ball theory, where you have to have something that keeps your interest through the entire mix that stitches all the different sections together. So like if you have a verse, and then you come out of that verse and you're going on your way to a second verse. Well, there's got to be something that happens in the time between the two verses to keep somebody interested, you know?
Right.
And those things have to be at the proper level and sound to take over the interest of the song until the next interesting part, which is probably the vocal, comes back in, as opposed to just vamping on a bunch of boring chords and stuff. So
yep.
I don't know that I'm making myself clear, but...
No, I completely get what you're saying. And I must admit, in some of the stuff that Dave and I have done, I don't think I'd thought about it in those particular terms, but I had thought to myself that in some of the stuff that, you know, that I listen to from, you know, other artists, that there is always something that just keeps you interested in one bit linking two pieces together. And I'd thought about exactly that without having made it as clear a statement in my mind as the way you just put it. But yeah, it totally makes sense.
Yeah. So you might have like the intro of the song. Let's say the intro of the song is four bars.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's another intro just like it before the second verse. Well, maybe that should only be two bars. And, oh, by the way, maybe that guitar figure that led into the first verse now ought to be maybe a stereo figure. And now since it's the second verse, maybe that's where the strings come in. You know, and then when it heads to the bridge, maybe there should be some kind of major scale leading up to the bridge and some counterpoint to keep it interesting and to keep it moving so that when you finally get to the bridge and all hell breaks loose and all the other parts come slamming in, you know, you've led up to it in a proper way. So,
yeah, nice.
Just like, you know, that's kind of how I think.
Yeah.
I got the idea from a friend of mine named Brad Aaron, who's one of the best engineers I've met. And he heard it from one of the guys who was mixing those old Bee Gees records.
Wow.
Yeah. And he heard it from him. And basically, he called it the bouncing ball. And I call it that now because, you know, the bouncing ball, you have to bounce through each section and tie the sections together as you go through a song. Now, do I know for a fact that this came from the guy that mixed the Bee Gees? No, I don't know that, but that's how it came to me.
Yeah, right. Interesting. So the last time we spoke, I was on the verge of running a podcasting and audio engineering course through a little community college here on the Central Coast. And I think it must have only been a couple of days after we last recorded that they reached out to me and said, we've had zero interest in your course, so we're not running it. So anyway.
I had a similar thing happen. There's a studio not far from here that wanted to make some extra studio time money by having some training going on. And at the end of the day, there was nobody that wanted to do it. And that's because I think that they can do it cheaper at the community college where I'm teaching. So why pay for me at the studio when they can get me cheaper at the college?
Sure, so, yeah. Know.
And who the hell wants to hear what I have to say about it anyway?
I do. And so we should probably explain to people that we actually tried to record this episode, what, three days ago?
Yeah, you know, and it did not work, and it was bloody and ugly, and you'll explain it in a second, but I just want to say that when you have something like this set up between two people on opposite ends of the globe on Skype, if one end doesn't work, both ends think it's their fault.
Yeah, it can be difficult to track down where the problem is.
Right.
It really can. For those who don't know, I'm pretty sure I have discussed this. For the last almost 2 years now, I've been running my desktop computer, which is a machine that I built myself. All of my computers for the last 20 years have been machines that I put together myself. But for the last 2 years, I've been running a dual boot situation where I've been running Windows 7 64-bit Pro and Linux Mint, which is a version of Linux Ubuntu. And I basically have only kept Windows around to do all of my audio and video stuff because everything else that I do, all my images, image processing, all my bookkeeping, all that stuff I do on Linux. And that system had been running beautifully until about a month ago. And I was here on a Saturday afternoon. I was running Windows. I needed to do something on the Linux system. So I went, you know, start button, restart, and booted into Linux, did what I had to do, went off and had dinner. That's right. It was a Saturday night. And it was about 10 o'clock Saturday night. And I suddenly thought, oh, crap, I haven't mixed and edited Shutters Inc., my photography podcast, which was due to go out on the Sunday at midday. So I came back to the study, went to boot into Windows, and I get this catastrophic failure, Windows can't boot, and all this sort of drama. So I grabbed my Windows 7 DVD, thinking that I'll be able to use that as a rescue disk to just boot into Windows, and hopefully I could repair the issue. Anyway, long story short, ended up having to completely reformat my entire system, lost both Windows and Linux, and had to set both up again from scratch. Well, Linux, not quite so much. That's a whole different story. But in the process, I thought, do I stay with Windows 7 or do I go to Windows 10? Because everyone's saying how, you know, support for Windows 7 is going to go away. And you know, everyone should be moving to Windows 10 now, yada, yada, yada. And I've heard so many horror stories about Windows 10, particularly from audio guys.
Okay, hold it. Okay, hold it.
Yeah.
So you've heard all these horror stories about Windows 10. So you immediately just jump all over it. That makes a lot of sense, Bruce. Really, honest to God.
There are other reasons for why I decided that yes, I'd go to Windows 10, and I don't want to bore you, Doc. But with regards hard disk drives, there are two ways of formatting them. There's the old way, which was called BIOS. And use what was called a master boot record. And there's the new way, which is called UEFI and uses what's called GPT partitioning tables. And the whole problem was that it's very difficult to install Windows 7 using the new method. But the problem is, because I wanted to run Windows and Linux off the same physical drive, which was an SSD, it wasn't a spinning drive, it was an SSD, whichever way you go, both operating systems have to run that way. And Linux wants to be GPT because it's newer. And so that was what informed my decision to go, yeah, okay, I'm not 100% sold on Windows 10, but I'll go with Windows 10 because it's easier to set it up under UEFI than it is to try and make Windows 7 do it. So that was kind of what, you know, made me decide to go down this path. So I got Windows 10 running. And everything had been going really well. And in the process, a mate of mine that I used to work with told me about a program called Macrium Reflect, which is a disk imaging backup software solution that can take a disk image of your operating system. And you can set scheduled snapshots to be taken, either full snapshots or just incremental snapshots. And I've downloaded this and I'm still running it on the 30-day trial, but I'm thinking now I'm definitely going to buy it. So I had this weird thing happen 3 days ago when Doc and I sat down to record this podcast, where I jump onto Skype and all the audio just sounded like, it was just rubbish. I'll actually put a link to my SoundCloud account in the show notes for this episode, because I put up a sample of what my audio was sounding like at the time. And the only thing I could think to do was to completely reformat Windows and start again, because it had affected everything. Like, every piece of audio software I had on my system was doing it. Like, it wasn't just Skype. Reaper was doing it. Media Monkey was doing it. Any YouTube video I tried to play did it. It was just an absolute mess. And I was like, oh man, I cannot afford the time to have to go and do this all over again. And I booted out to the BIOS screen as you turn on your computer, and I put my Windows 7 disk in because I thought, stuff it, I'm going back to Windows 7. And I was actually at the point where I was looking at the screen that says, you know, Windows is loading the drivers ready to install, and I suddenly thought, oh, hang on, I installed that program Macrium Reflect. And so I hit reset and I was able to run the rescue disk that I had created for Macrium Reflect. And using that, I was then able to point to a snapshot that had been taken only 13 hours prior to when you and I were trying to record. And once I rebooted, everything was back to normal. And I was like, wow. So I don't know what the heck happened to my system, because to the best of my knowledge, I'd not installed any software. I hadn't taken any updates. I'd been working just perfectly fine a few hours before, and then all of a sudden it just all went pear-shaped. So
this is probably a good time to remind everybody that not only are you and I on opposite sides of the globe, we're on opposite sides of the technology globe, because you use a PC and Reaper.
Yep.
And I'm using Mac and Pro Tools.
Yep.
And it couldn't be more different than that.
That's right.
And yet, we don't usually get on each other's case about, you know, the differences in our setup, you know?
No.
And I'm going to be big, you know, for once, and not, you know, remind you 100 times, you know, that you're a PC. A lot of people actually have really good luck with PCs. Yep. Even if you don't, you know, what can I say?
Look, I generally have up until now. It's just been this last month. There's been a couple of weird things that have happened. And to be honest, I'm kind of wondering if my sound card isn't about to die. Because the sound card I'm running is 9 years old. And it's been through multiple reformats and various other hardware changes within my computer. You know, as motherboards have changed, CPUs have changed, RAM chips have changed. So it's served me well for 9 years, and I'm wondering, is some component in there about to die, and is that what's been giving me grief?
Well, what kind of sound card is it?
It's an M Audio card. It's one that has an external breakout box, 19-inch, and it's called a Fast Track Ultra 8R, and they're no longer made. It's a retired unit now. And in fact, there is not, this will tell you how old the card is, there isn't even an official Windows 10 driver for it. I'm actually running the Windows 7 drivers on Windows 10, and it works perfectly. But officially,
you are asking for trouble though, doing that, having all this stuff that's not
quite possibly.
You know, that reminds me, I ran into a student not long ago that had, you know, he was in Pro Tools, and without checking to see if he had compatibility, he updated his OS to the latest and greatest OS.
No.
And then Pro Tools wouldn't work.
Yep.
Doc, what's wrong? My Pro Tools won't work.
And was he on a Mac?
He was on a Mac.
Yep.
And I don't think he had auto upgrade on. I think he just, you know, went for the newest OS and didn't bother to check that web page that Avid has that tells you if you have compatibility. And you just can't. You know, you can't do that.
Right? Do you know what? In those last 6 months that I was at ARN, before I got retrenched, but whilst I was running Pro Tools, which was on an i5-based Mac, we had exactly the same issues. You just couldn't hit, yes, I'll take that update when the notification popped up, because if you did, it would quite often break what was, up until that moment, a perfectly stable system, which was just ridiculous. Right. So it's not the first time I've heard that story. So,
well, I'm getting ready to upgrade my OS and my Pro Tools as well. I just don't want to spend the money, so I haven't do it. You know, I'm running an HD rig, so it's a little expensive for me to upgrade it.
Yeah, right.
So I've been stalling. You know, I'm running version 11, and the world has moved on to 12.8.
Yep.
And even farther than that, and I'm kind of holding back. But I'm going to do it.
Yep.
You know, I can write it off my taxes, so I will do that.
And what audio interface for in and out are you using?
Well, my Pro Tools rig has an HD card, which is a PCIe card that's inside my Mac Pro.
Yep.
And it talks to my Pro Tools I/O, which is their, it's gray and black. It's a two-rack unit I/O called their HD-I/O, and it's a great-sounding I/O, much better than the 192s used to be.
Right.
And it's, you know, and it cost a few thousand. It's a pretty pricey converter.
Yeah, and how many in and out is that?
I have 16 analog in and out on this thing.
Nice.
Now, you can buy three versions of it. You can get all analog in and out like I did. You can get all digital in and out, or you can get half and half, which a lot of people buy the half and half, so they get 8 digital and 8 analog. But I have a lot of outboard equipment that I often use when I'm running Pro Tools, if I'm mixing. So I wanted those 16 ins and outs.
Oh, so you're actually using analog outboard as real-time inserts whilst you're mixing?
I am.
Wow. See, Reaper has that functionality, but I've never looked into how to do it. I probably should.
Well, I just like to send out a warning to those who are thinking of trying that. I set up Pro Tools so I mix back into a new track in Pro Tools. I don't just do a bounce to disk. I mix back. I open up, you know, I set up my session so that I can mix back into what I call a mix track, which is a stereo audio track. Yep. And then I'll bounce that, but I won't just do a straight bounce. The thing about outboard equipment is, in Pro Tools, you can do an offline bounce where it's faster than real time, where instead of playing through the whole song, it does it in the computer.
Yep.
But the problem with that is that if you have outboard equipment hooked up, that outboard equipment doesn't know what you're doing, and you get zero output when you try to bounce through that outboard equipment. It doesn't work.
Apart from which, you can't run stuff out at faster than real time through things like compressors, which have attack times and release times, because those attack times and release times would get messed up by audio streaming at faster than real time.
Oh, absolutely. So you have to. So I kind of pick and choose where I use the stuff. If I'm doing a session that I just have to be in a big hurry and I have to get it done, and it's more of a, it might not be a, well, I take it seriously, but it's not as critical as some of the other mixes. I might not use some outboard equipment, but if I'm doing something like what I've been talking about at the beginning of this thing, I probably will. And if I really, really want to keep that analog sound, I might record it back into Pro Tools on some aux tracks or some aux audio tracks so that if I get back into the session, I don't have to hook up all that outboard stuff, because then I can work faster.
Yeah, right. Yeah, nice. I really should look into how that's done through Reaper and have a crack at it, because I've never tried it myself.
Well, you'd have to spend more money on more I/O, I'm guessing. I don't know how much I/O you have.
I've got 20 in, 20 out.
Oh, well, then you're good then.
But I don't have that much outside, you know, external hardware. The only two things that I'd be likely to run through would be the API EQ and my compressor.
So, hey, I've got an 1176 for sale.
You told me that. Can you switch it to 240 volt for me before I buy it?
No, maybe it'll work twice as fast if you run it there.
Oh, dear. Well, mate, it's been good to catch up.
It has.
I know we haven't really covered anything of a certain topic in this particular episode, but we do have something that we're working on, and we'll just keep that under wraps until we've got something to talk about. But good to chat, and I hope we can do it again in a couple of weeks' time. We won't leave it for 3 months like we did this time.
Has it been that long, really?
It has been that long. I've been slack. I really have.
Well, okay, that's the way to build listenership, right? just go away for a while, you know?
Yeah.
You know, I was on the internet the other day looking for other podcasts that are audio podcasts.
Yep.
And, you know, the one that Big Al was on,
yeah,
that was like the best podcast ever. And they shut down a couple of years back.
After this one, yeah.
Yeah, well, of course, after this one.
Yep.
And that was the funniest podcast ever, like the one that where they talked about Keith Richards snorting his dad, you know, stuff like that, you know. Right.
I don't think I ever heard that, but I can imagine.
Well, you know, Keith said in his book that that's not actually true, but it's funny as hell. You know? So, his book is really good, by the way.
What's the book called?
Life.
Nice.
And it's really, I recommend it. It's a good book.
Yeah, right.
It's really, yeah. But in any event, yeah, it has been too long. And, you know, you have a tendency to ask me questions that I don't know the answers to. So it kind of keeps me on my toes when we have these little sessions.
Absolutely. You know? We can certainly put some homework into our next episode and hopefully address that in a week or two or a couple of weeks' time.
Well, let's talk in advance and actually make a list of what we're going to talk about so that I can not look stupid when we're online.
Sure. So basically, I threw this idea to Doc just before we started recording today about the idea, or let's call it one of the holes in my knowledge, and that is an understanding of DBM versus DBU versus DBV. You know, I understand peak versus RMS, but you know, when you talk about levels coming out of a digital system and then interfacing with analog hardware, that's kind of where I will admit I don't understand it enough. And so let's not get into it now. Let's leave that for the next episode. But that's something I'd really like to get a better understanding of.
Well, I think there's another important thing that's part of that. And that is, if you're near digital zero, you're already way above where analog equipment expects to see you.
Exactly.
You know, so you need to be down from dB full scale, you know, like around 12 dB or something like that, or maybe more even.
Or more,
In order to get down around zero VU, which is what your analog equipment wants to see.
Yeah. So that's the bit I don't fully understand and would love to understand better.
Well, let's go through it, you know?
Yep, for sure.
Okay, but not now, because I want to have time to bone up on it.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. Well, mate, it's been great to catch up.
Always.
And we will talk with you soon.
All right, man. Watch out for the window stuff.
That's right. See ya.
Okay, bye.
Sign language. Another audiotoyou.com quality podcast. For questions, comments, and feedback, email theboys@signlanguagepodcast.com.